Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd of June, Mondays from 9 until 10, always all things political. And we have a lot to talk about this hour. A new poll from Newsweek showing that only 14% of Americans say they are satisfied with the direction of the country. Why are we so unhappy with the direction of the country? The same poll from Newsweek shows that, and this is one of the only polls that shows this kind of huge lead on the part of Senator Obama. The poll shows a substantial double-digit lead, 51% to 36% over Senator McCain. We'll look at the issue of public financing and why Senator Obama has chosen to forgo public financing. How much money will he be able to raise? Who will have the money advantage? What difference does it make? Iraq not being covered very much by the news. Why is that? And we'll look at race relations in this country, because along with having the first African-American candidate for the presidency, 51% of Americans call the current state of race relations excellent or good, but more than 6 in 10 African Americans now rate race relations as not so good or poor. We'll be looking at that issue as well, and whatever else you'd like to bring up in this political race. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Our guest this hour has a good international perspective on this race. He is a BBC Washington correspondent. Jamie Kumarasamy is with us. And Jamie, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ray, we're getting some feedback here. Let's try it again. Hello, Jamie.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but we're getting tremendous feedback here. So hold on, and we'll try and get the problem fixed, or we may have to call you back on the phone. We are going to the second hour of our program, I'll tell you, while we try to get this worked out. Be speaking with Holly Bull, who's president of the Center for Interim Programs. And it's an interesting question of whether or not students should postpone college for a year after high school to gain experience. They have the time if they don't want to go on to college. What is it they should be doing? There's a very interesting program known as the Gap Year, and some young people have taken off to various parts of the world to do work in Africa, third world countries, to follow what they think may be their interest and then move on into higher education after a year of sometimes traveling the world and doing some very good work. So all of that is coming up this hour. I'll give you our phone numbers while we try to fix our technical problem here. And it is 1-800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. If you would like to send us an email today, you can do that as well. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. So that's our lineup for today, and we'll get to our show in a moment. I think we'll get our guest on the phone because our special line that we have that goes to Washington. Is just giving me problems. I can't hear Jamie. All I can hear is myself, and that would drive you a little crazy during the course of the hour. So we'll get him on the phone and talk about all of these issues. We do have one of our first callers wants to talk about the Israeli-Iran situation, which is, of course, very much in the news, and we will discuss that situation as well. A lot of people are upset with Senator Barack Obama for not taking public financing. We'll talk about why he made that decision and how much more money he'll be able to raise as a result of not taking public financing. But is that a bad thing for him to be doing? How are the Republicans and the Democrats doing when it comes to raising money? We'll look at that issue as well, and whatever else you'd like to bring up when it comes to all things political. We do this every Monday, and it seems like we've done it for a long time, doesn't it? We've had this race going on for months and months and months. So it's been an interesting one, a fascinating one, and fun to keep track of all of it. We'll call Jamie on the phone because our line isn't working very well, and then we will be carrying on our conversation and welcoming your phone calls as well on this Monday as we do our All Things Political segment. John Treader is trying to reach Jamie by phone at the moment, and then we'll be off and rolling. A couple lines are open. If you already know what you'd like to talk about, feel free to give us a call, and we'll get you on the air momentarily. What is it? What issues were the issues that really grabbed your attention over the last few days since we've done a political show? What concerns you? What do you think of the race? What do you think of all of the issues that are part of the presidential campaign so far? Which of the ones do you think that Americans are certainly most concerned about? We will talk about all of this the first hour of our program. The second hour came to our attention because of an article in the New York Times. Let me pull up the article here and see what day it was. June 15th, and the title is In a Year Off the Beaten Path, A New Direction for Life. It's written by a young woman who at the end of her junior year in high school realized she wasn't ready to apply to college or take the SAT and wanted to postpone the whole application process and focus on studies during her senior year. And a friend suggested this gap year, which was a year to pursue other interests after high school. And so in the senior year, in the fall of the senior year, she contacted the Center for Interim Programs, a company that arranges gap year programs for students. She knew she wanted to go to a country where she hadn't been before and designed a program with its help. Spent the first half of that year helping villagers in Ghana, and then the second half studying art history in Italy. But the 4 months in Ghana turned out to be a defining experience. So we will talk all about that. All right. Enough of me talking. I think we have Jamie with us now. Jamie?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Finally. I'm sorry. I was hearing myself instead of you, and you know you can't talk if you do that.
I've had that experience the other way. Don't worry.
Thank you so much for being with us. Let's start with this, and I'm sort of – I don't know if you do these kinds of polls in England, but I just find this poll that shows that only 14% of people in this country say they are satisfied with the direction of this country. That's quite astounding, isn't it?
It is, really. I mean, I think we do have those polls, but I can't imagine that they'd be that low. And you know, I think as a foreigner looking in on America, a country where, you know, people do accentuate the positive, people are very upbeat and optimistic by nature, to get that sort of figure is astounding, and it really gives you a sense of just what an uphill battle John McCain will have in this atmosphere to get elected. Because although, and you know, here in Washington, Republicans will tell you, look, the Democrats have been in charge of Congress for a couple of years nearly now, you know, it's not just us, you know, the overwhelming evidence is that people look to the White House and look to the party that has been in the White House as really to blame for this.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think people are upset about, Jamie? Is it the economy? Is it Iraq? Is it more than that?
It's both of those. I think obviously on a day-to-day level at the moment, the economy is affecting people, but I think Iraq is obviously a huge factor in this. And I think it probably goes further than that. I think both of those, but certainly in my experience, reporting from around the country, and I've reported from more than 40 states now. Not yours, actually, but from quite a few, time and again over the last few years, people are very, I get a sense people are very concerned about America's image in the wider world, about, you know, what people think of America these days. And I think that seems to me to be a factor in all of this as well. I think that there is a sense, certainly in some quarters, that there's a sense of uncertainty about the future, both here domestically, but also America's role in the world.
Mm-hmm. America's role in the world has changed. We're no longer to be emulated.
It's complex, isn't it? I think in lots of respects, America is still revered, and there is still a lot of respect for American values. But clearly, that has been tested in large parts of the world, and it's largely down to what's happened in Iraq. And you know, we've seen over the last few years the sort of reactions, the demonstrations. It is something that people are questioning. So my sense is that has quite a lot to do with that, although you have to say at the moment it is the economy, it is people looking at the future and really not knowing whether they'll have their home, the roof over their heads, what's going to happen with their jobs. Very, very basic things, I think.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Iraq, there have been reports over the weekend that show that the amount of coverage, television coverage of Iraq particularly, is so minuscule right now. Is the same true, do you know? I know you're in the States now, but is the same true in England that it's receiving scant coverage? And if so, why?
It's certainly reduced a lot. There are various reasons. I think that there had been a period of pretty relative calm over the last few months, and sadly, that's often doesn't make news, and people, the editors are taking decisions that perhaps, there is less interest to cover it. I think also, certainly from both a British and an American point of view, the situation in Afghanistan has received more attention. Certainly in Britain, we've had a lot more military deaths there. There's been a lot more attention paid to that over the last couple of months, and I think there is often a sense that one can only take so much on news bulletins of this kind of thing, rightly or wrongly. But it has been noticeable here in the States. As you say, I'm based here in the States. I'm watching most of the American media. When there was that big bomb the other day, 50 people dead, and I think only one of the networks even broadcast a line about it. It is it's a worrying development, and I think obviously the other issue is the issue of the safety of journalists.
Right.
BBC and others have been very careful in keeping their journalists safe. The amount of reporting people can do now has been it is freer. People are freer to move, but still the risks are there. So I think that's obviously another factor. But yes, I think for people looking at the global situation, it's pretty worrying that there hasn't been that much reporting out of Iraq over the last few months.
And do you imagine that as the months go on, there aren't that many months left for this campaign, but the candidates, Obama and McCain, do have rather substantial differences when it comes to the future direction of the country and the direction of American involvement there. Do you imagine that this will be a defining issue for voters at this point?
It's interesting. I mean, I think it will be for some. And obviously, we've had Barack Obama saying in the last couple of weeks that he will pay a visit to Iraq and Afghanistan. Those have been, of course, one of the issues that the McCain camp has been playing up, talking and saying, look, why hasn't he been there? Look how many times John McCain has been. And John McCain clearly does want it to be central to his campaign. So I think whether or not there is a huge amount of public interest, whether or not there is a huge amount of media coverage of it, it does seem that John McCain is keen to keep it at the center of his campaign. So I think because of that, it will be an important topic.
Mm-hmm. I've read, Jamie, that the amount of interest, particularly in Obama, is just way over the top in England and in other parts of the world. Is he being covered and really kind of supported as being the European preference for the next president, or am I making too much of that?
I don't think you're making too much of it. I think there is an absolute fascination, and it's not just Europe, but you're absolutely right. I get messages from my colleagues all around the world who are going to countries with their own huge problems, Zimbabwe, Burma, countries like these which have been in the news, and they are often being asked as the first question, what's happening with the presidential race? Mm. And so much of it is down to Obama. I think you just cannot, it is impossible to underestimate the symbolism of an African-American mm-hmm. being president of the United States for the rest of the world if he does become it. As for whether or not he's being supported, I think a lot of people, clearly in Europe, a lot of people would like to see him there. They do see, although they know John McCain and know he's, he does have a pretty good reputation. I think in the current climate with Barack Obama as his opponent, most people, I think, with a passing knowledge of American politics, will look at John McCain and assume, as of course the Obama campaign would want people to assume, that he will simply be a continuation of George Bush. So I think, the change mantra, which obviously has done Obama very well here, is something that the rest of the world is looking at as well, and I think to a large extent empathizes with.
Mm-hmm. And what is the significance, Jamie, of an African-American being president of the United States? What's the significance to the rest of the world?
I think the rest of the world, I think the change mantra and the fact that this is such an embodiment of it, actually having this person as the most powerful person in the world, would be hugely significant. People constantly know and talk about America's complex history of race relations. It's a well-known theme. Mm-hmm. It's a theme I'm always, when there is an issue surrounding that, I know that there's a lot. I get huge amounts of feedback from reports that are connected to that. If you look at it, for example, Hurricane Katrina, why was that such a closely followed story around the world? It's partly because of the race issues that were brought up as a result of it. So I think the fact, I think the symbolism of an African American as president of the United States is just seen as a huge new start and a new vision for America. Obviously, in many ways, if Obama becomes president, it would almost be impossible for him to live up to these expectations. But he's clearly setting them up, isn't he?
Yes. What about if you're an agent of change? How can you not accept public financing?
Well, that's a good question. He's clearly taken that calculation, hasn't he? That
mm-hmm.
It's worth a few days, perhaps, of media talk, such as the question you've asked me now. and he, I'm sure, is thinking, look, we'll take that battering. We do not want to have our hands tied behind our backs. But yes, he's getting a lot of criticism for it. But I think it seems to me the Democrats have looked at the last couple of elections and have decided they are not going to do anything that would limit their ability to respond to attacks from the other side. But yes, obviously it does raise questions, but I think he has taken a calculation. It's not an issue that the general public at the end of the day will care too much about when it comes to November.
You must be flabbergasted by the amount of money that is spent on the presidential race here.
It is flabbergasted. I mean, you look at, take my own country, the United Kingdom. Obviously, our elections are short, just a couple of weeks, the campaigns, and they involve just a fraction of the money here. And I think everyone is flabbergasted. Again, when I report on the finances, on the amounts of money involved, it is another one which around the world resonates, especially now, especially at a time when the global economy is going through such upheaval, how everybody knows that the effects here in America, the subprime crisis, et cetera, that so much money is being spent on the election campaign really does stagger people around mm-hmm. the world, I think.
And when you look at the two systems, do you think that yours is better, slightly better, a lot better?
I've been covering this election, it feels like forever, but
I know.
18 months or so. I have to say, I greatly admire this system. And of course, it has its flaws. Of course, there are idiosyncrasies. But certainly the idea that everybody has had, as it turns out, on the Democratic side at least, the chance to have their say, and in several states, people have had the ability to go up and ask tough questions of all these candidates. Mm-hmm. The candidates have had to put them through this. is incredibly admirable. I certainly wouldn't, as an outsider, start to criticize the American system, because I think it's absolutely fascinating. I think, our system, it has its advantages, brevity, money, but people will look at what happened. Tony Blair stepped down, and Gordon Brown was essentially handed the premiership. It's questionable whether that is a great bit of democracy. People could argue that, but certainly the American system, from an outsider's point of view, is absolutely fascinating. And, mm-hmm. and again, it's something that when I talk to colleagues, when I've talked to listeners around the world about it, although a lot of people scratch their heads and wonder why on earth this has gone on for so long, I think there is another side, which is, this is such an important post. The world feels it has a vested interest in who the next president of the United States is. The fact that these candidates are so put through the mill and tested is incredibly good.
When you said, I haven't tired of it yet, everybody asks me, aren't you darn tired of this? Because some of them are. I love it. But when you said 18 months you've been covering it, I'm thinking, we have too. That long a period of time. That's a long time, isn't it, Jamie?
It's a long time. I haven't tired of it. I mean, I shouldn't be doing this job if I was complaining about covering what has been one of the the most fascinating elections ever, really, hasn't
mm-hmm,
it?
I mean,
it is... it's my first U.S. presidential election here covering on the ground, but I think I've picked a good one.
And, I think you have, too.
It's just starting, isn't it, the general election? So we've got some time to go, but I'm looking forward to the conventions and to the actual few months leading
right.
up to it.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Jamie. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Jamie Kumarasamy is a BBC Washington correspondent, been covering for 18 months now the presidential campaign. And as you heard him say, his first campaign, what a campaign to have as your first campaign, right? We welcome your phone calls. Oh, you can send an email, too, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to phone calls now for Jamie. We start with Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello.
I'd like your guest's opinion on the following. I sincerely believe that we're on the brink of something that is going to have a profound impact on world politics. Probably on the U.S. election, and that is, of course, Israel and Iran. For some time now, you know, I've suspected that the Israelis probably think that Obama's going to win, and because of that, they probably feel that in the future they're going to be in a weakened position. Their air maneuvers that they conducted in the last few days, I think, is indicative. The problem is that they don't have the capability, the aircraft capability to be able to take out Iran's facilities with conventional weapons, and they might, unfortunately, have to use a couple of nukes. I think sincerely that they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to wait around for, you know, Obama to speak with the Iranians, and I think that that's going to have a profound effect on everything. I'd also beg for a chance for a follow-up.
Okay. Jamie?
Well, obviously a lot of attention paid to this apparent dress rehearsal for some kind of attack that was revealed by the New York Times at the end of last week. And there have been a lot of, concerns, interest, however you'd like to put it, in what might be happening. But obviously this is all going on behind the scenes. But clearly there are preparations. Now, you would say perhaps, of course, there are preparations. Does it necessarily mean that there is going to be an attack? But there has been a huge amount of speculation in Europe it might be. I'm afraid I can't enlighten you, but that is speculation that comes and goes in waves. And yes, the fact that there is such a difference of approach between Obama and McCain on this, and this is becoming... is going to be one of the big issues in the campaign, does just simply fuel the fire of that speculation.
Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. I think they're going to do it. I think that there's also one way to avoid it, and that would be for Bush, for McCain, and Obama to have a press conference in which they say that whoever wins of the two, you know, their support for Israel is unconditional. If they came out with a huge statement like that, that may stay the Israelis' hand. But if that isn't done, if they feel that they're going to be in a weak position, they're going to act. History repeats itself. They've already done it twice. In September of last year, they took out the Syrian installations. Almost no news coverage whatsoever, and the interesting thing is almost no protest from the Arab world.
Yeah, I suppose the interesting thing, if, in terms of I've said their positions are different, but I mean, I don't think that joint news conference is likely. I don't know what you think, but if you listen to what Obama had to say at the AIPAC conference here in Washington a couple of weeks ago, he was certainly sounding a more Israel-friendly tone than he has done in the past. He was certainly sounding a lot more like McCain and Bush than he has done before. So perhaps he's moving towards that. Perhaps the realization he does need to talk tougher in a bid to perhaps prevent Israel from going ahead with that. But certainly here in D.C. in the Pentagon, they're saying that they probably won't know about an Israeli attack before it happens. There won't be a warning, just as there wasn't before the Syria attack you mentioned.
Mm. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Let's go to Joe from Milwaukee. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
My question refers to that 14% statistic approval rating. And my question is, what are these 14% looking at that makes them think that this country is headed in the right direction? Are these corporate people, or, you know, I don't get it.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know who they are. Do you know who they are, Jamie?
I don't know who they are, no.
What are they looking at?
Well, they're probably looking at their own circumstances and feeling that they're not so bad. You're right. But, you know, that figure, it is astounding the more you think about it.
And, yes, it is.
It is, you know, if it's very easy, isn't it, to be cynical about this question of change and America wanting change. But when you listen to those statistics, you know, whatever form that change takes, it's absolutely clear that's what's needed.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Joe. Lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation for all things political. Jamie Kumarasamy, who's a BBC Washington correspondent covering this long campaign, is our guest this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to send an email, do that at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Jim from Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, hi. Well, of course, a lot of what's going on in the world today relates to the energy crisis, so I thought I'd just mention something that I just heard on another station today, which struck me as kind of interesting. Apparently, there was a Frenchman who 15 years ago made a discovery and patented it, but he couldn't find anybody to have an interest in developing it. And now, apparently, Tata Motors, and I haven't found exactly the specifics on the web yet, but they do have a website, TATA, out of India, has a car that runs on air pressure, you know, putting compressed air into it. It has a range of 125 miles, and it would cost $2 to put in the air pressure, and it would take 4 hours under normal circumstances, but with a special system that could be put up in stations at various locations, it could take 3 minutes to charge it. And it's lubricated by cooking oil, and it's selling as a taxi cab over in India for $12,700. So it's, you know, there's a possibility this type of product could be converted into, you know, a passenger vehicle to be used here. And I just find it interesting because, again, I think one of the great hidden issues of our time has been the withholding and the development of technology to maintain monopolistic pricing systems in the world. And I'll just close with the idea that Gandhi once said, "There go my people, I must catch them, for I am their leader." And so if we keep pressing as individuals on the system to amp up development of technology, perhaps we'll get some substantial changes.
Jamie?
Yeah, well, there's an interesting speech John McCain's giving today, of course, talking about offering I can't remember the price, is it? $300 million. It's a huge reward for somebody who can develop a battery-powered car, a huge battery to power cars. So obviously this issue of new forms of powering transport is going to be a big one in the campaign because of the price of oil being something that's touching everybody at the moment. I mean, it is fascinating to look at, you know, and I think all these things are related in some ways. I think this idea that America's looking at itself and wanting to be the leader in this, and I think when you've looked at the automobile industry, which is obviously so important for this country, and you've seen that Japanese firms, Toyota notably, have been ahead on the whole conversion to hybrid cars. I think, you know, that's another reason why perhaps America is now looking at itself and, you know, wondering, can it still be the leader? Can it still invent? Can it still innovate? And I think, you know, McCain is clearly trying to tap into this and, you know, hopes that can be a way of distinguishing himself from Obama, who's talking more about taxing the oil companies, taxing their profits.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's quite an interesting theme that you know, I think we'll see develop over the next few months.
Is it a remarkably different situation in England, Jamie? Are you all driving much smaller cars and electric cars?
We're not all into electric cars yet. We do drive smaller cars because we've got smaller roads, smaller country. I mean, it is one of the things as a Briton you notice when you first come here, just the size of the cars is astounding. But you know, the SUV and the pickup and all these, you know, these are now going through a traumatic period, aren't they? We'll see what happens over the next few years. But certainly, it's interesting. We mirrored. I mean, we always tend to pick up on things that are happening over here in Briton and a few years later. But the SUV had become very popular in the UK maybe 4 or 5 years ago. More and more people, certainly in London, were driving it, and it frankly looked ludicrous. I mean, here there are good reasons to have big cars. You have big spaces, and you know, sometimes obviously it's perhaps not necessary, but on our small streets, it frankly often looked pretty ludicrous. And I think when you look at the prices, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you know what the price of gasoline is in Briton, but it's more than double what it is here. So that, I think, has been a pretty effective way of weaning people off large cars.
Right. Let's look at some of the polls here, and I don't know if it's way too early to see if these have any long-lasting impact, but this new Newsweek poll shows that Obama has a substantial double-digit 51% to 36% lead over Senator McCain at this point in time. Do you look at that as a journalist and say, whew, that's significant, or do you say, well, it's way too early?
Bit of both, I suppose. I mean, it is a lot bigger than the most recent polls have been giving him, what, maybe 5-6% lead, and now this is suddenly a lot bigger. I mean, I do think it's significant in that with his advantage in terms of money raised, enthusiasm, the numbers of Democrats who've been turning out for the primaries versus the number of Republicans, in many ways, my sense is that it was only a matter of time before a poll like this came out. It doesn't mean, obviously, that he's going to keep it up, but objectively, you've got to say he has a huge advantage at the beginning of this campaign. Yes, there are all the doubts we know about, issues of race, issues of is he too liberal, the question of will the Clinton supporters come over and support him or move to John McCain, the fact that John McCain is, of course, perhaps you know the only Republican candidate in this current climate who could give Obama or any Democrat a run for their money, but still, in some ways, it doesn't surprise me that there is this poll out there that he does have a huge lead, because you know the sense of especially on the Republican side, there is a real sense, I feel, of crisis. That half of the Republicans really are very unsure about John McCain, that he is someone who came through this system, came through the middle. It was an amazing story in itself, but you know, when the dust settled, this putting the two men side by side, yes, there is a pretty clear choice, but Obama does look to so many people like the future, and McCain looks to people like the past. He's trying to battle against that, of course, but you know, Obama clearly goes into this with all the advantages.
Right. And what about the issue of race? The Washington Post had a poll last month. Nearly 9 in 10 whites said they'd be comfortable with him, but overall 51% called the current state of race relations excellent or good. More than 6 in 10 African-Americans rate race relations as not so good or poor. And then the Post reports in a separate story that Obama's historic primary victory has sparked white supremacist activity mainly on the Internet, according to leaders of hate groups, neo-Nazi skinhead segregationist groups reporting gains in numbers of visitors to their membership. What's that all about?
I think that just shows how conflicted America, or frankly, most Western countries are about the issue. You know, Britain's absolutely no different. But it's you know, 9 in 10, that is a pretty interesting. I'd be interested to know what the comparative polls maybe 10, 20 years ago would be about having an African-American president. It's interesting, isn't it? On the one hand, he symbolizes change. On the other hand, he's the exception that proves the rule. You know, if he becomes president, the numbers of African-Americans in the U.S. Senate decreases by 100%.
Yes.
There really aren't that many African-Americans in politics at the highest levels, are there? The odd governor here and there. And it's similar situation in Britain as well. But he, even more so, it shows what a phenomenon, for want of a different cliche, he has been to come through, to be able to give off this post-racial aura, despite all the obstacles,
mm-hmm.
and to get this far. It is, you do have to, and I'm sure you feel exactly the same, whether you're a journalist, whether you're in any walk of life, you do have to pinch yourself sometimes and just think, wow, Barack Obama is, the
right.
Democratic candidate for president.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's remarkable as well. Jim, thanks for the call. We go to Esty from Madison. Hi, Esty.
Hi, good morning. I'm just back from 2 weeks in Ukraine and Russia, which was a really eye-opening experience. And one of the things that was just mind-blowing was being in a society that is really a police state, just dozens of police in every street corner, personnel, armored personnel carriers here and there, people being stopped all over the place, in the metro, on the streets, for no reason whatsoever, cars being stopped. Everywhere I went, actually, one of the first things I was told was what to do if police stop me and what kind of papers I need. And a lot of racial targeting, very, very obvious. And as I was going through that, I was thinking how even more important it is now for me to fight against these trends that are becoming quite more obvious in this country too. The surveillance bill that just passed, which exonerates phone companies that are helping to spy on us, more police everywhere, whether there is need for it or not, having the most people incarcerated per capita in this country, even more than in Russia and other places like that. And what's worrying to me is that I saw that both the Russians and the Ukrainians are just, this is their life. They seem to be totally accustomed to that. There's no grumbling. They kind of don't even know exactly what I'm talking about when I mention these things. And to a large degree, the American people seem to me like that, too. They don't seem to notice that our rights are being taken away from us in a pretty rapid speed right now. So I'm just curious to hear Mr. Kumarasamy's outlook on what I'm saying, and also mm-hmm. what can we do to wake up the American people?
Thanks, Esty.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually spent 6 years in Moscow.
Oh, you did?
As a reporter there in the mid-1990s, so I know that part of the world and Ukraine quite well. I don't think you can quite compare the two, but yes, there is obviously, there has been a huge debate here in the States, but I think that there is a debate, and I think, if you look at the fact that the surveillance law that's going through Congress now has been, has had months and months of debate, and the fact that issues such as Guantanamo Bay are out there, the Supreme Court is batting backwards and forwards, and yes, lots of Americans are very concerned about what's happened to the country since 9/11. But there's certainly, I think, the big difference is here in America, there is a pretty transparent attempt to wrestle with this and to wrestle what many see as the overreach of the administration since 9/11. It perhaps hasn't happened as quickly as some would like, but you know, there is a sense that there is a much more of a there's a democratic equilibrium here that it's finding its way, and that there are voices being heard and that people are able to voice their concerns. So don't worry, I don't think America's quite going the way of a police state just yet.
More phone calls for Jamie in just one moment. Our guest is a Washington correspondent for the BBC who has spent the last 18 months covering the presidential campaign here in America and finding it extremely fascinating. It's his first U.S. presidential campaign, and what a campaign to have as your first assignment. Jamie Kumarasamy is with us. We'll welcome more phone calls on all things political in just a moment. Our phone number again, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be talking with the president of the Center for Interim Programs, and it is an interesting program that takes in students who have decided to postpone college for a year after high school to gain experience and also to have the time to evaluate what they would like out of higher education. So we'll talk about the gap year, the second hour of our show. Jamie remains with us until 10. We go to Tom from Burlington next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Mr. Kurasamy. I listen to your show. I'm running for president myself. I announced that a year and a half ago when George McGovern was on Kathleen's show. My father, Charles A. Boyle, was George McGovern's mentor when he was in the House of Representatives. He was a representative before he was a senator. But I'm putting out my first. I'm a songwriter, and I grew up I was a page in the House, and I'm putting out my first. I call them speech songs. In Kenny Bunkport Wells, they took one of my songs and they put it on the 9/11. The 9/11 memorial that they built there, and sometimes President Bush takes people over there, and there's a bell, and they go over and they ring the bell. And for Independence Day, I'm putting out a song that was written based on the lyrics, and that's going to be my first speech song. And then between now and the convention, I intend to put out songs on all the different issues. I can write lyrics to music or music to lyrics, and I used to sing right there in the back of the House of Representatives. I watched them make the bills, and I called it Scream at the Eagle. There's an eagle up in the House of Representatives. And one of my friends was in the Western Union. He was up on the balcony, and I was down there. He and I used to sing songs, and we call it Screaming at the Eagle. But that's my plan. But all I really have to do is actually campaign in 6 or 7 states and go to the convention and say, listen, if you really are serious about getting the White House, you have to nominate a moderate Democrat. And I represent the moderate wing of the party, and I really want to take my party back. And so anyway, now as far as Mr. McCain is concerned, he does have a really good chance of winning, because when America elects a full Congress, the House and the Senate, they normally give the nod to the other party. So these new polls that are coming out, they're really very, very premature at this moment. And my website is presidentboyle.com, and you'll be able to hear the music when I start putting it on there.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call. Jamie.
Well, I think, you know, we've been talking about how, from a foreigner's point of view, this election campaign is so fascinating. And I've met quite a few people who are running for president in different states, and it's, you know, it's one of the great things about America, that anyone can run for president, and people do, you know, will go to a few states, will run here and there, and can put their point of view across, and long may it continue, frankly.
Long may it continue. Makes the country pretty darn interesting. What about his point about McCain, that you need somebody from the moderate wing of the party, moderate wing of probably both parties? That's been the conventional wisdom for the past couple of years. Do you adhere to that?
Yeah, I mean, this idea that it's all going to be won by the independents or those in the center is probably true. But, you know, when you look at the polls, was it the National Journal poll that gives Obama the number one liberal senator,
right,
ranking, that's certainly something that the Republicans will be reminding us and do remind us time and time again. You know, yet You know, he has been able to convince the Democratic electorate that he's not too liberal to win, that he's someone who can chime with mainstream America. And I think the fact, you know, that you've been mentioning several times, this sense of that America is not happy with the way that the country is going, I think that gives more of a chance of someone from the liberal wing to, with a perhaps a more of a radical agenda to come in and to win. But he does clearly, I mean, I think that's a very valid point, that mm-hmm. he does need to convince the huge swathes of voters in the middle that he is not too liberal for them. And he's, you know, judging by what's happened in the first couple of weeks of the campaign, he's doing that. He is moving to the center, as is traditional. Whereas, interestingly, John McCain isn't, I think. I mean, he's tacking on either side. He's doing some things which mm-hmm. which are centrist, but on the other hand, he's also, you know, talking about the Supreme Court decision on Guantanamo Bay as being one of the worst ever made.
Right.
One or two other things where you suddenly see someone who's trying to appeal to the base, and that, of course, has been his problem, that he's not someone that large numbers of those you know, core Republican voters have been happy with. So he has two jobs to do, whereas perhaps Obama only has one.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tom, for your call. Good luck on the race. Randy from DePere, hi.
Hi. Say, on the topic of the Iraq war and reasons why we're not hearing or seeing much about it in the news anymore, supporters of the surge will, of course, say that the surge has been working, and to a certain extent, of course, they are correct. It has been working. But the story that is not getting enough publicity out there was that concurrent with the surge, when we sent an extra 25 to 30,000 troops over there, the military has gone a little bit further, and they have actually, they are paying members of these Sunni local citizens groups $300 each per month for not attacking U.S. troops. With 77,000 fighters, that amounts to just about $25 million per month. So is the surge working? Yes, but it's not due 100% to us sending over 25,000 to 30,000 more troops. Part of the truth that's just not getting out, and I believe I heard this on the BBC, is the fact that we are paying $300 per month.
Jeannie.
Yes, no, I mean, there is clearly a much more complex picture out there, and that's one of the, you're absolutely right, it is one of the downsides of there just not being as much coverage that these, you know, under the radar points about what's happening there are being lost, and people, you know, reporters are able, I mean, it is one of the ironies I was saying, it has been easier for reporters to get out and to report in different parts of the country over the last couple of months, yet for whatever reason, there are fewer of them. Certainly here in the States, it does seem harder for reporters to get airtime from Iraq when it's not simply a case of big and you know, bloody explosions.
Thanks, Randy, for your call. Jackie from Delafield. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Enjoying the program. I am a 51, I can't believe I'm that old, year-old mother. An 18-year-old daughter who is so fired up about Barack Obama. For Christmas, she gave me the book, Audacity of Hope. I read it. I became an Obama supporter. I'm wondering what your guest thinks about the youth movement here. And it just seems so strong and so large in support of Obama. Do you think that inspirational enthusiasm will carry over into the election? I'll take your comment off the air.
All right, Jackie.
Yes, it's interesting. I was talking to my wife about this last night, actually. I've got two kids, they're younger than yours, 9 and 6. They are mad for Obama.
Really?
They walk around. We're here in D.C., obviously, where he obviously got, I can't remember quite how high a percentage of the primary vote, but very, very high. So it's pretty hard to find, there's pretty hard to find a yard without an Obama sign in, frankly. and my kids sing Obama 08. When they go past it, and it is—I've been struck by the fact that obviously that's not affecting my reporting, and I'm just stating a fact. But that I've been struck by the amount of times I've encountered people at polling stations across the country in different states who have told me, "Well, we weren't sure about Obama, but my son, daughter, who is anything from 5 to 25, said you've got to vote for him," And I did. And I think it's a huge, huge thing. And my sense is, certainly at the moment, it's going to continue. I've met quite a lot of young volunteers, kids who would normally be going to various camps, high school kids who are volunteering. And it's, you know, it is a pretty phenomenal amount of support, and it's a very tough one for John McCain to fight against.
Yeah, it is.
You know, to get that level of enthusiasm.
Well, Jamie, you've been delightful. Thank you so much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure. I've enjoyed
Thanks,
it
Jamie.
Very much.
Great. Jamie Kumarasamy, he's a BBC Washington correspondent, has been covering the presidential campaign here in the United States for the past 18 months. It's a long time. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios, and thanks, everybody, for your always interesting calls. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Monday morning conversation. Did you ever take a year off from school before you pursued your studies to figure out what you were going to do? Let us know about it here on the Ideas Network.